This is the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
Good Friday morning, everybody. Glad you're with us. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News.
Boy, that's a good guess. I don't know.
Right? I'm going with it.
Throw a dart and hit a channel, baby. We're there.
We're definitely on news. We're always on news.
Always on news.
It's just a matter of if we're on two or not.
Yeah.
Unless there's some big event going on, then sometimes we go to you or
Pac
the Ocho
Rim, sir.
Or something. I don't know. Yeah. Listen, there's only six left. God knows where we are.
Who's this guy?
Yeah.
Hey, how are you?
Hal, what's up, man?
What's up, peoples? How we doing?
Good. How are you?
Let me just start off by saying HTTFT.
HTTF.
Hail to the Washington
football
team.
Hail to the football team. Hail victory.
Wow.
Hail to the football team. Fight for old DC. It just naturally rings off the top.
And let me say to you guys both, happy Tay Day. Folklore dropped at midnight last night. I'm about halfway through the album on the way in this morning. Already a delight. A lot to get into there. Bon Iver. Wow, what a presence.
Wow. Heard that with Jerwin in the intro there. A little Taylor Swift was all part of that. So glad you're with us. And baseball is back.
There you go.
Woo, man. And is there anything more peak baseball 2020 than the opening day game being shortened by a massive storm? I mean, is there anything that could be more ominous and foreboding for the sport in general than that happening?
Nothing. The rain delay ended up lasting longer than the actual play until they called it after six innings.
They finally figured out those pace issues.
Unbelievable. Yeah, there you go. That's exactly right. How about us? We just threw out there yesterday, Mike, you and I, over under 2.5 home runs. First inning, there were two home runs. The first inning's over, there were two home runs. You had to be going, oh, my God, it's going to be a slugfest. Now, it turned out it wasn't because Scherzer, you know, and Cole both. Scherzer, what, with 11 strikeouts in this one? Cole giving up just the one run and one hit, and that was the home run to Adam Eaton. So they locked into who they were.
They did, and in all that, we need to address the elephant in the room in all
this
one.
Go ahead.
Let's get it out of the way.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Junior.
So, listen, I just want to say Dr. Fauci's been really busy.
Yes.
Like, he's had a lot going on, and I think he wanted to show us that he's not perfect, but you can still try and do the right things in all this one because, man, that first pitch was not great.
It was terrible.
Wow.
But let's be clear. What would be better for him? Would it be better if he made the throw that he made? And we'll understand, well, he's clearly got a lot on his mind, and there's things way more important than this game that he's working on to make this country as safe as possible and as fast as possible. Or if he had thrown a strike, would people like, yeah, that's our guy, or like, he's clearly not working.
I think people said, wow, he could do what he does for infectious disease and throw a strike. Listen, I felt bad in Book It yesterday when Mike said, Book It, he's going to throw a strike. I said, I want him to. My heart is in the right place. But I didn't think there was any way. Now, the man is 79 years old.
Former marathoner.
He walked out to the mound. He didn't stand in front of it, but he didn't stand on the rubber. He stood somewhere in between that. As soon as he stopped there, I thought, oh, no. And then he let loose on a 50-cent pitch, you know, and then that was
who knew they were boys, right?
Yeah.
Fauci and Fitty. Their album's dropping soon, right?
Oh,
it's got
to
be.
Dr. Fauci had a tough time getting in the zone. Get in the zone is brought to you by AutoZone. Get in the zone, AutoZone. I feel bad doing the read for that man, but we still can celebrate Dr. Fauci and what he tried to do in that moment. And thankfully, that was like the last bad pitch we saw that night. Although, so I want your guys' thoughts on this because obviously, we had that first game take place. It was our first foray back into this. And if people hadn't been watching the exhibitions, they didn't hear, all right, the piped-in crowd sounds, the things that have been a part of that, that ambient sound in that game. I felt like you got the best of both worlds because baseball is kind of a passive watch, right? You can have it on while you're doing some things. You're sitting there and you're paying attention to some. But as long as it sounds normal, it felt like a normal game. I didn't really feel the lack of crowd. And I still got the added advantage of, all right, this is what we want when things are quiet. We can hear a little bit more. When you hear the crack of that Giancarlo Stanton home run and the immediate GD for Max Scherzer right as soon as he gets to the end of the follow through and knows that thing's gone.
Open mic, live mic, hot mic all the time. Actually, the funniest thing for me in watching the game last night was our pal Buster just sitting there by his lonesome. He's talking about missing the smell of the hot dogs and the baseball.
Yeah.
He's just sort of in, I miss the food. I'm in my little container here, and I'm just watching
a baseball
game.
It's BYOF, man. He's got to bring his own food to these things. I mean, that's where we are. I didn't have a problem at all watching it. I mean, the sound they piped in I thought was fine. You know, you get used to, just as I'm sure the athletes do, you just get used to there's nobody in the stands. You normally have that. That's what you'd like to have, but you don't have it. So you just adapt to it as all the other sports has done it well, and you deal. I do like the sound, though. I do like the sound.
And they had the organ players in there going along. They've got all that background.
All the introductions, all everything. Yeah.
I do think, though, what you guys are talking about is going to be the most fascinating part of the season going forward. The things you will be able to hear at baseball games that you never would have been able to hear in the past. There was that game a few years ago because of the protests in Baltimore where they played a silent game, and it was a fascinating listen more than it was a watch, because there was nobody else in the stands, and you're going to be able to hear things like that GD off Scherzer right. I mean, that's going to be the fun part of this. You're going to be able to pick up so much from the live mics in the baseball games from the players themselves. It's going to be fascinating.
I'll be interested. Fox is going to put the
fake fans,
virtual fans in there. So I'm going to be really interested to see what that looks like, because everybody will do the crowd noise thing, so you kind of get that ambiance. But they'll have the look of fake fans in there. We didn't have that last night in either ballparks, as we mentioned. Yankees win this one 4-1 in a rain-shortened game. The two big boys, Giancarlo Stanton, goes 2-for-3. Judge goes 2-for-3. They're 4-for-6. They have all the RBI. Stanton has 3. Judge has the other one. So, I mean, the big guys got it done for them. The Dodgers win 8-1. Game that was tied 1-1 going into the seventh inning before the Dodgers broke it open. Kike Hernandez has 4 hits in that one. As the big news there was the fact that Clayton Kershaw did not start. He got scratched before the game. Turned out it was Tuesday. He kind of messed up his back a little bit. So we'll see where that goes. I mean, the problem for me is he's had that issue before. He's had back issues before.
And they can go at any time.
And this is a short season.
Yeah.
So how many starts do you end up missing? Hopefully just this one.
Yeah, so I can say it is interesting, because you saw, all right, you have guys on the Yankees side, Judge and Stanton, looking very good early on in all this one. But that is the effect of this shortened timeline, is if you're dealing with anything or you've got something and you don't get your normal routine, I'm sure because Clayton Kershaw's dealt with that before, anyone who's got a back will tell you, you get used to the routine that you need to feel good to go. Like, I mean, and Trey laughs, but it's true. Even now, like, I haven't played in God knows how long at this point, and my back wasn't nearly as beat up as Clayton Kershaw's. I never had to go under the knife. But if you don't have a routine every day, you're going to find yourself walking around, tightening up in a bunch of places you don't want.
It's just funny. Anyone who has a back, you know, it's like, we all have a back. it's back issues.
The general sports. I got a hammy. I got a back. I got a knee.
In all honesty, we saw it last week with Tiger at the Memorial. We talked about the fact that he finished in the late afternoon. He had the short turnaround to 8:27 that next day. How would the back respond? And he had an awful round. He shot a 76.
Jason Day
on that Friday. Yeah. So we'll see where that goes with Kershaw. Now, they have expanded the playoffs to 16 teams, so it's not like the Dodgers would be in jeopardy. And we're getting way too far ahead of ourselves here. But my issue is that Clayton has had this before, and in a shortened season, man, everything counts.
Quicker. It is interesting, right? Because on opening day, the Yankees won and the Dodgers won. So can we just fast forward to the World Series between the Yankees and the Dodgers, right?
Can we just
do that?
Put
on that train going forward?
And I'm sure Major League Baseball would like to, because, like Dad said, you got all the microcosm to the things that could happen at the beginning of this year, certainly, meaning some players dealing with an injury like that in Kershaw because you don't have the normal lead-up time to all of this. There's some great sound from Mark to share that we can get to talking
Absolutely.
About how that timeline works. But you also had the other thing they're all worried about, a young star testing positive and not being available for that game in Washington. You had Juan Soto unable to go in a lot of this in the beginning, dealing with a coronavirus test because of a delay in the time that you got it back. Yeah. Like, these are the problems that you start up that baseball should be worried about, and quite frankly, so should football.
Without question, and we'll hear from Jeff Passan on that, plus Doug Glanville will join us a little bit later, as will June Lee and Marlou Rivera. So lots more to get to on this. But coming up next, one franchise that got it right out of the gate, and one that is still trying to figure the whole thing out. We'll get to all of that.
Just come up with a freaking name. Call it Steve.
Sentinels is coming. Just do it. I mentioned 2.5 weeks ago. Just do it.
I love that Mina just advocated for the team being the Washington Steves.
Just call it Steve. Just call it Steve.
Probably best for them just put a placeholder in, get through whatever this season is going to be, and then roll out the new name next year.
This sounds like somebody owns the trademark to the name that they want, and this is something that's going to be battled out in court.
No. Yeah. I sense a theme today during the rejoins.
Oh, boy.
New album dropped last night for Taylor Swift.
Happy Folklore Day. It's Tay Day, guys. Man, what a What a journey we're on. What a journey of self-discovery for her. The surprise album drop in the middle of the pandemic. She stayed busy. I appreciate that.
So you're already halfway through the album?
Already halfway through the album right now. Feels pretty good. You can feel there's a lot of different presences in this album right here. Cardigan, I think, is going to be the first music video off the album in a lot of this. But a lot of different influences. She put out a big, long post the other night talking about everything that went into this because we only found out about 24 hours ago. It was sort of a last-minute thing.
Held it off well.
Usually there's a pretty big role. Out some clever social media stuff in it. Very simple this time. Maybe finding herself a little bit.
Oh boy.
She had the documentary on Netflix not too long ago documenting some of the more serious things that she had been a part of and the things she had been through. So maybe a lot of personal growth in this one.
A lot of breakdown there.
I was about to say
that. A lot of breakdown.
That was very impressive. I spent a lot of time on that.
I am very excited to finish this album.
Well, we'll get through the show quickly so you can
do
that.
Thank you. Like I say, if you guys can somehow speed up time over the course of the next four
we'll
hours,
whip through the next 3 hours and 40 minutes just to make sure you
no
get
problem.
On.
No
thankfully, we've got a lot of stuff. Like,
yeah, we do.
Who knew yesterday we were going to see not one but two new team names in all of this going on between
one placeholder and one
new name and another kind of we're going to wait and see.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So let's do the positive first.
Oh my gosh!
Seattle's new NHL team nailed it. The Seattle Kraken.
Release the Kraken.
I mean, already your pregame is set, right? Your pregame is set. You play Liam Neeson saying, release the Kraken as the lights are going. You're getting ready to introduce the team. I mean, it's golden for him right now. What a phenomenal name.
It feels perfect. This is like we used to play Michigan State, the Spartans, and they would play when 300 came out, Spartans, what is our profession? And then they would do the with the crowd
it
in their game.
Awesome.
And all of a sudden you're like, oh man, this could go poorly. And then you remembered you were playing Michigan State, except for that one time. I know what happened. Don't tweet.
Fake F.
Don't tweet me. But it was an awesome way to intro the team. So Kraken already set.
It's fantastic. I love it. Now they wanted to call. Do we have the explanation of, I didn't know if we had the explanation.
Oh yeah, no.
Emily Kaplan did a great article on ESPN.com about that because they considered calling themselves the Metropolitans. But remember, there's a division.
Because they used to be called that. They won the Stanley Cup in 1917. They were the Metropolitans, but there is a division, the Metropolitans, so they weren't going down that road.
And by the way, somewhat weirdly, historically, the Seattle Metropolitans were playing the Montreal Canadiens in the 1918 Stanley Cup Finals, which was delayed by the Spanish flu pandemic that year. And they actually had to call there was no winner of that because there were a couple players that died during the Spanish flu pandemic played for the Canadians that year.
Dear
God.
Wow.
So there you go.
Well, that guy, I mean,
that's
that
a reality.
Just a little history for you.
That's a great bit of history. Also, the Kraken have going for it great colors, a great secondary logo with the anchor tied into the Space Needle and all that.
The whole thing is just fire.
It was, you know what it was? It was a very good course on how you roll out a new logo. They had the merchandise ready to go. They had a breakdown going on. Their website did a very good job of explaining, this is what went into our logo. This is what went into our color scheme and all this. This is why we did X, Y, and Z and laid it all out really well.
So was anybody shocked that Michael Wilbon hated it?
Yeah, no. Water's wet.
The most predictable thing, he absolutely hated it. I love it. I think it is fantastic.
So that one, two enthusiastic thumbs up, right? And then there's HTTFT, the Washington Football Team. The team formerly known as a team we're not going to say anymore, announced yesterday that for the 2020 season, they will not have a logo specifically. They will not have a nickname. They will just be known in the NFL's 2020 regular season as the Washington Football Team. Now, to me, a couple of things come to mind right off the top here. Number one, clearly this is an indication that there wasn't a real plan in place, and this caught one person, Dan Snyder, by surprise, and he really didn't want to change the name. And two, they probably are trying to chase something that somebody else has, and they're trying to get the copyright for it.
Yeah, no, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And yeah, that's about as straight talk as it gets in this situation. And you know what? It's one of those things that when they announce this, like, all right, we're going to be the Washington Football Team. First off, I'd imagine that someone trying to be sensitive to the idea that their name was a racial slur sent an email in that office, and then Dan Snyder saw that email. I was like, Washington Football Team, I haven't heard that one before. This is genius. Let's go with it. And then that sort of took root there, Inception style. But it's one of those instances where this is probably the right move.
Yeah.
Like, giving time, room, and thought to something that is going to be the name of your football team that obviously has a ton of branding associated with it is probably the right move. But when you make the wrong move so consistently in the process leading up to this, we're going to roast you on the internet like we did yesterday. Like, those two things have to happen because of what your past actions have
been. Dan Snyder's not getting the benefit of the doubt, because I agree with you in all honesty, because of the wrong moves by them and because of the fact that, remember, 7 years ago, Dan Snyder said, I'll never change the team name. And now how quickly this all happened about, you know, the three other owners who owned 40% wanted to sell. They wanted this name change. They wanted the name gone, and they wanted a new name. And you know Dan Snyder didn't want to do it. So then he got forced into doing it. So why force another new nickname?
Yep.
Right? I mean, you know there's got to be that search. There's got to be that copyright. We had Floyd Reese, who was the GM of the Titans, my coach with the Oilers, GM of the Titans, said it took over a year to get everything going the right way on that. And that wasn't off a quick, you better get rid of the name that you have now and get a new name. So I agree with you, Mike. I actually think this is the right move. Take your time. Find a way to find the name that you want, but because it's Dan Snyder, because he does things, has done things wrong, he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt, and he's going to get killed for this. But I actually think, take a breath here. The unis are cool. They're going to put the numbers on the helmet and where the logo was. You live for that for a year, and then you get a team name. I'm not going to be this hot takey, have a big deal, say this is a big deal, but there is a reason that it's going to get roasted, and the reason is Dan Snyder.
Pragmatically, what you're saying makes all the sense in the world. But the other thing people are going to do, and it's an interesting discussion, whether it's right or wrong, is like, that's an interesting thing to talk about, and we'll have a lot of discussion about that. Well, we're not talking about the other thing that's going on with the Washington football team. It does provide some cover for them in a very easy way.
Well, and that's what we believe, and that's why we believe this feels so disingenuous, because when you had the announcement, non-announcement last Monday saying, well, we're going to, or it was that last Monday or this Monday, time is a flat circle in the middle of this pandemic, but when Washington came out and made the announcement, again, we're going to change the name. We don't have one, but we've done the sort of internal review, and we're going to change it when we have a new one. Then the Washington Post article comes out and all that. It just looks so transparent as something you were trying to cover up with that kind of news that now you're right. We look at this and rightly say, focus on the main thing. Like, that external review that they've got going on right now is the important thing in Washington. And while this is going to be a good punchline where we all get jokes off, we got to keep the main thing the main thing.
You're 100% right, but it's doing that thing already. So we all need to make sure we
keep
are doing our due diligence
on the right thing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
By the way, this is the timeline of events that we said. They announced they would go through a review of the nickname and logo on July 3rd. They announced they would retire the nickname and logo at the end of their review on July 13th. That was last Monday. And then today's announcement that they would go with the Washington football team as a temporary name was yesterday. In the middle of that, it was like the end of last week, was that Washington Post article. So you can see how that timeline is a little bit suspect.
Exactly. So again, just understand what is and isn't going on with the Washington football team. And all of that is Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Golic and Wingo with you, presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And coming up next, the one thing that could stop the entire season when it comes to Major League Baseball, even though it just began. We will get to that.
Golic
and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr., who was in the front office for the Washington football team for a few years after his playing career is over. Louis Riddick is here with us. Louis, HTTFT, hail to the football team. It doesn't quite have the same ring, does it?
No, it doesn't. And it's people are going to have some fun with it, obviously. They already have. It's kind of been par for the course for this franchise of late, though, to be kind of the be on the wrong side of being mocked and ridiculed and criticized for many of the things that it has done recently, and deservedly so. This is just another thing that kind of falls right in line with it, although I guess none of us should really be shocked over the fact that, and I heard you guys referencing this as we were coming on, that that they haven't decided on anything. We shouldn't be shocked by that. We shouldn't be shocked because they are shocked, I'm sure. I'm sure Dan is shocked at the speed with which everything has kind of come down on him. Although all of us on the outside looking in are sitting there going, really, were you that clueless? Did you have that amount of a lack of awareness? Look, it is what it is. Now this team can be called nothing besides the team. You know, their uniforms, quite honestly, you know, the way it looks like they're going to look this year, they look like they're going to be Alabama North which isn't shocking either if you think about all the Alabama.
I was about to say that defense has got to be half Alabama players
anyway. And look, he, you know, he has an affinity for those players from that program, and deservedly so. They come from a great program down there in Tuscaloosa. But look, man, it's just one thing after another with this team. And although there's a lot of people who are diehard Washington fans who now say, "Well, get off of our back. We're doing what we're supposed to do." So what do you mean, get off of your back? I mean, this is coming down on this football team, easy comparatively when you think about all the different things that they have just been accused of and ridiculed with as of late. It's just one more thing that on top of it.
Yeah, this one is a comparative drop in the bucket compared to the real issues that organization is dealing with, Lewis. And so the timeline for that seems like it is going to be extended right now. I'm curious, though, the NFL and the Players Association right now working on some issues that need answers quicker. The last, three things that the two sides continue to negotiate: rules for the training camp, acclimatization period, procedures for the opt-out, and how to handle the league's long-term finances. I'm curious, what do you think the timeline looks like for these decisions now?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, like I've always, from talking to the people who are, on the ground and really trying to, get these teams prepared and ready to go, in the event that everything does move on schedule, they have all indicated to me that, what would be the problem with slowing things down, pushing the season back, delaying the season a little bit, by a few weeks, so there's more time to work out all these things. Because right now, when you're talking about what's the timeline, I mean they're up against it. I mean, every minute, every second is something that has to be utilized to its fullest if they want to start everything on time and have the season start on time. So I really don't know, without being privy to those negotiations between the NFLPA and ownership. I mean, who knows what their timeline is? I just know that they're up against it. I know that the people who are on the ground, who are really making the decisions that really affect what is the most important, which is the players' health and the players' families and the staff's families and the staff themselves, those guys are working 24/7 around the clock. I mean, their timeline is 5 minutes ago as far as what they need to get done. And it is a monument. Let me just tell you, we're talking now about player opt-outs, and we're playing about how the league is going to handle the financial, repercussions in terms of how much do the owners take on, how much do the players take on. I mean, and I get it. Look, football is a business and all, but look, the most important thing is really the thing that the trainers and doctors and medical staffs are going through right now. And let me just tell you this. These guys are trying to prepare for things that they can't even foresee happening, because they're dealing with something that they can't see. They don't know where it is. They don't even know how to really combat it, with 100% effectiveness. Obviously, no one does in this world right now knows how to combat this with 100% effectiveness. And those are the people who right now really deserve a ton of credit, because they are going to shoulder all of the blame if things go wrong and people get sick and something happens to individual players and or coaches and their families. And I'm telling you, they have a job unlike anyone in the National Football League has ever had right now, in a climate that none of us have ever faced. And I don't envy them. I really salute them. I applaud them for the task they're taking on. But that's really where the focus should be, is these medical and training staffs and the kind of work they're trying to put in right now to make sure that these guys stay safe and these coaches stay safe, so we can have something to talk about in the next couple of months in terms of live sports, football in particular. It's a big deal. It's a challenge that's nothing like basketball, baseball. I mean, it's so different, man. And these guys are earning their money. Let's put it that way.
Lewis Riddick joining us here on Golic and Wingo. So Mike just mentioned there's still like three things that are out there being negotiated. That being said, veterans are supposed to report July 28th. Put your player helmet back on and don't be in management anymore. If you're a player, you showing up. If these are unresolved, are you showing up on July 28th?
Yeah, given how my career unfolded, and if I put myself back into that time, Mike, I would show up. I mean, obviously, I would have some questions, and obviously, there would be some serious concern as to, what are the financial ramifications going to be to me? What are the safety protocols as it pertains to me, and then how it obviously is going to affect my family? But I think most guys who I know have said the same thing. I would show up. I would have a lot of questions, but that's just kind of how I was wired during my playing days, which was I would have done whatever it took to play the game And looking back on it now, I wouldn't have changed anything I did when I did play. And looking, you know, looking forward and trying to project into what these guys are dealing with right now, I think I'd make the same decision a lot of these players are going to make, which is, this is what we do, man. It's what we do. So just, you know, you would put faith in the people who are really negotiating for my safety and for my, you know, financial security to do their job too, because I'm willing to do mine. And it's just it's such an unfortunate situation. Guys are put in such tough situations. You should never have to sit here and compromise and make a decision that will compromise your health and or your financial status, because look, you've earned it, you've worked for it. This is something that you know is yours, so to speak. It's something that's personal to you, that being the financial status that you have been able to attain and your health and preserving your health. If you shouldn't be put in these kind of situations that have to compromise either one of those, you know, because of a situation like this. But that's the times that we're living in. But yeah, I'd be there. I can't imagine what some of these guys are going through and the decisions they're having to make and the conversations they're having to have with their families, though. It's got to be tough.
But it is. And one thing I do think we need to get out there, a lot of people have sort of said sort of cavalierly, well, the NFL clearly has no plan for this. I think the NFL knows the reality of their game, which is you can't have a single snap and have any social distancing. Like we were just talking about this, Lewis, earlier. Literally, that baseball game last night, you could have played it and no one could have touched each other. I think the NFL was hoping that the long runway would figure something out, and then the spike and the lack of people doing the things that are necessary to control the damn thing are really more problematic than anything the NFL could have tried to implement in the first place.
Exactly. They were looking at it, you know, above them in terms of, well, we're going to have this kind of, you know, really clamped. We're going to really have this clamped down and have a little better hold on it, so then we can do what we need to do. And although there's never going to be a situation where you eliminate 100% of the risk, it'll be a much more, a much more tolerable level of risk than what it is right now. There's no question that they thought things would be much further, you know, much further along as far as testing and contact tracing and flattening the curve and et cetera, et cetera. But you're right. I mean, you see it every day on social media. You hear just walking around, you know, wherever it is that you live and where you are. There's so many people that are so resistant and so stubborn and so pigheaded about this entire thing, as if it's, you know, like it's something that's just so personal to them. Like this virus is infringing upon their, you know, their life and their lifestyle and their freedoms and what they want to do. It's mind boggling, the attitude that some have taken towards this. And it is, it's having a trickle down effect. It's having an effect on the sports that now that we want to see. People want to see those sports, but they didn't want to do the things leading up to the time that now these sports are being played to make sure that it's safe for everyone. And you're right. I was watching some ESPN Classic type games here on our different ESPN networks here, you know, different bowl games, college games and stuff. And I'm sitting there watching those recently and I'm going, this is a game I played my entire life that, you know, many of us have played our entire lives. And I'm sitting there watching it. And for the first time, I'm going, every single play, there's just a mass of humanity. Every play, we're banging against each other. I'm going, when you're talking, I mean, look, you're right. Basketball, I watched the baseball game last night, soccer and all this. I'm not going to say where, you know, it's easy to social distance, but obviously there's much less contact, Trey. You're right. And I'm sitting here in football. It's impossible. I mean, every play, every single guy is next to somebody, right next to somebody. So the thing that they're trying to accomplish right now by getting the season started on time, the same thing with college football. I mean, look, man, I mean, John Harbaugh said it the best, I believe, a couple weeks ago. He said, you know, some of the things that we are being asked to do are basically they're impossible. It's impossible to play this game the way that the health officials want you to play it in terms of player safety. It's just impossible to do, but they're trying to do it anyway. And man, again, I mean, it's something that just doesn't have foolproof 100% guarantees with it right now in terms of answers and protocols. There's just no way. There's just no way that you can just tell though, listening to the players, they just want there to be something in place that they feel as though everyone is looking out for their well-being first and foremost. And they're obviously not feeling that way in mass totally yet. And that, again, that's unfortunate. When you go back to ask me that question, what would you do? Even with all that being said, I would still say, okay, I'm going to strap it up and play. Just please do your job to help keep me safe in a situation where I know you can't keep me 100% safe. mean, how crappy is that to have that feeling going out there on the football field? But I would go anyway.
It is the position I think a lot of us that strapped it up at some point all kind of come back to in a lot of this one. We're talking to Lewis Riddick, our ESPN NFL front office insider on this one. But Lewis, such a valuable perspective on all things around the world, the sports, and certainly around life. So wanted to get your reaction to something. I heard some pretty profound words from LeBron James yesterday after their practice, after their exhibition game. Wanted to play that for you and get some of your reaction. Here's what he had to say.
I love the game. I love the NBA. I love what we've built, not only here in America, but all over the world. I think this is the most precious, beautiful, impactful game in the world. But a lot of people kind of use this analogy talking about Black Lives Matter as a movement. It's not a movement. When you're black, it's not a movement. It's a lifestyle. We sit here and say it's a movement, and okay, how long is this movement going to last? Don't stop the movement. No, this is a walk of life. When you wake up and you black, that is what it is. It shouldn't be a movement. It should be a lifestyle. This is who we are. And we understand that. And we know that for one step that someone else might have to take, or for 1 yard someone else may have to take, that we know we got to take 5 more steps. And we know we got to take 10 more yards to get to the end zone. I mean, we understand that. We know that. So, but also what makes us, a strong, powerful, it makes us so unique and unified is that we'd have had so much hardships in our life, either from personal experiences or loved ones or reading history or seeing videos, Rodney King, just being a part of just the communities that you're in where you just racially profiled from the time you come out of the womb. So it's not a movement. I don't like the word movement. Unfortunately, in America and society, there ain't been no damn movement for us. There ain't been no movement. We land in this with justice for Breonna Taylor. We're going to continue to harp on that.
Lewis, obviously a lot to take in there, but some pretty poignant remarks from LeBron James that I'm sure resonate with a lot of people.
Sure. Look, Mike, I heard those last night. I was sitting up, watching. I watched their game last night against Dallas on NBA TV. And, I heard his comments, post scrimmage. And look, I get what LeBron is saying. What he's saying is, look, this may seem like a moment in time for some that starts, that started with the murder of George Floyd. But this has been something that has been going on for hundreds of years for African Americans. And it is a way of life. It is something that African Americans have dealt with since, it seems like, forever, since the onset of slavery and, through the 1900s, through Jim Crow laws, through the civil rights movements of the 60s to now. I mean, this is something that this always been kind of one of the, a way of life for us that is much, much bigger than, this specific moment of time that now, obviously is characterized by a lot of attention worldwide, and in particular, here in the United States, but again, worldwide, it's much bigger than that. And it's like, I think what LeBron is saying is like, well, where have you been? What do you think's been happening? You think this just started with the murder of George Floyd? Do you think racial injustice and systemic racism just started with the murder of George Floyd? This has been happening for years and years and years, and people have been saying this has been happening for years and years and years. And, it kind of gets a little bit of attention and then gets swept under a rug and then just becomes systemic again and just becomes a part of what you have to deal with day after day after day. And it becomes so indoctrinated and so normalized that it's almost like there's no racism because it's just become a normal way of doing things. It's just a normal way that people act towards people of different races. And it's just like racism just becomes a part of society. And that's just a fact. So that's why he's saying, he doesn't like the term movement. It may be a movement for some. It may be this awakening or this enlightenment for some, but if you're black and you live in America, this isn't a movement. This isn't an awakening. This isn't an enlightenment for us. And when he says, okay, he's known for years that for every step, one step that someone has to take, if you're black, you have to take 2 or 3 steps in order to get to the same place. I talked about this a couple weeks ago about the fact that, as a young kid, I knew all along. It was told to me, and I kind of figured out pretty quickly that as someone who was black living in a predominantly, obviously, white society, that I had to be twice as good in order to achieve the same as someone who was a different skin color than me. That's just something that you're born knowing, or not born knowing. That's something that you're taught at an early age and that you figure out at an early age. And that's the kind of thing, that's what he's talking about. That this didn't just start happening over the past couple of months and this summer. And where now obviously all the focus and attention is on it because we're in a pandemic and people are sitting around at home and don't have anything to do besides focus on world matters. This is something that's been happening for a long, 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 long time. And he's kind of saying, you know, it's kind of ticking me off the fact that we're making this seem like, oh my God, this all just started recently. No, it's been started for a long time. But in mass, there wasn't this kind of movement to actually kind of do something about it. Now, all of a sudden, people care about it in mass and want to do something about it. Now, the repercussions for you, if you don't want to do something about it, are much greater than they've ever been in the past. And people don't want to be caught on the wrong side of history, so to speak. And maybe that's because genuinely they feel as though, you know, this isn't right and racial injustices aren't right and they want to do something about it, or because they don't want to be publicly shamed or ridiculed or made to feel like, hey, you're someone who's, are you for racism? Are you not against racism? So now people are trying to make judgments about that. And that's, you know, those are the kind of, you know, those are the things that really, I mean, we could talk about this and we have been talking about this a lot recently, but these right. are kind of things that those are the kind of feelings that LeBron is referring to. And obviously all of us as minorities and African Americans have, and it's a lot to kind of hold in. It's a lot to have had to deal with for such a long time, like we've had to deal with it. And it is good that now, obviously, these, as people call them, uncomfortable conversations, which I'm kind of tired of, you know, necessarily using that terminology too, because, yeah, it's uncomfortable, but why is it uncomfortable? It's uncomfortable because it's maybe something that some people consciously or subconsciously, I can't really speak for them, have pushed to the wayside and ignored and not acknowledged and kind of minimized and trivialized because they weren't the ones who were feeling it. Well, yeah, it's not uncomfortable for me to talk about it because it's something that's been normalized for me since I was, as LeBron says, since I came out of the womb, since I was a young child. These are the kind of things that I knew growing up black in America that I had to deal with. Yeah. They quickly seep into your conscious and your train of thought and what you have to do in order to make it through a day and the next day and the next day and the next day. And what is, quote unquote, white America? I mean, you understand that. And these are the kind of things that, those are the kind of things that I'm, you know, not speaking for LeBron, that it sounds like he, you know, he's trying to get out there, is that you know, this movement thing starting to bother me because, you know, it's not a movement for me. It's not a movement for my mom and my mom's mom and generations before me. It was just a way of life. And now people are going, well, damn, well, it wasn't quite so fair for you, was it? No, it isn't.
I think that's the awakening we're all trying to deal with. No question
about
that, it.
I mean, that's what he's talking about. And I don't mean to ramble on there, Trey.
No, man. No,
it's obviously it's an important issue. I mean, it's a big time issue, and obviously LeBron James is someone who has a big time profile, big time profile, and that's really what he's trying to get out there. And onward we go.
We understand, Lewis. On so many levels, we appreciate you, and thanks for your time and wisdom this morning.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lewis.
You got it, guys. All right, I'll see you.
Be good. Lots more to get to, but first let's get caught up with this SportsCenter update. Golic and Wingo here with you as we're continuing our conversations about what's going on in this country and what's going on with the return of Major League Baseball. For all of that, we're delighted to be joined by Doug Glanville. Doug, thanks for being with us this morning. We just heard from an impassioned Lewis Reddick about LeBron James' statements on it's not a movement, it's every day or a moment or a movement, it's just every day for him. I want to get your reaction to that and also what you saw from Major League Baseball, especially in the opening game between the Yankees and the Nats, everyone holding that tapestry together, and Andrew McCutchen, of all people, writing a speech that was voiced in the intro by Morgan Freeman.
No question. I mean, you know, I heard Lewis, and I understand what LeBron is trying to express. I mean, because the fear of temporary justice. You know, there's always this lurking concern, and this is based on history. You know, the nature of when something is systemic is that it's like water. You know, you plug a hole over here, and you're like, oh, let's fix the law enforcement, let's fix this relationship, and then it slides over into housing, and then it moves over to education, And it's so adept at morphing and shifting into something even more pernicious than when it started, because it's so woven into the response system of our country. And so I think there's an expression of frustration and insecurity about labeling it something that even implies that it's temporary, because it is experiential. Now, the shift, though, that has to come from it does resemble the movement, right? There's a necessity, if you're actually now trying to make full-scale change that will sustain, that you have to start engaging into the processes sort of that allows that change to happen. So whether it's legislative or policy or voting or whatever it may be, and these are things LeBron James has worked on, you know, that's where sort of the movement component comes into, because it takes that. It takes that constant pressure. It takes diverse people all working towards something to say, how does this actually change our society into policy, into law, but also into the social norms, where we're unlearning and relearning and reconsidering race in America. So I fully understand. And I think you look at, you mentioned Major League Baseball, you know, this statement with Andrew McCutchen's is poetry, and also the ribbon tying people together. And it's difficult because you have teams of diverse people all trying to sort out what they want to do, kneel, stand. And I think they were trying last night to create a sort of through line through all these players, saying, you know, we are united on this mission to be one team, and we have different ways to express that and different experiences, but it's important we support each other. And I think it's starting to resonate that it's more than just between the white lines or while we're wearing the uniform or when we're in the safe space of the clubhouse. They're recognizing the black experience outside of those white lines. You take the uniform off, or sometimes in Torrey Hunter or Adam Jones's cases, it's when you're wearing the uniform. And they're trying to bring solidarity throughout that connection that team is throughout professional sports and sports in general. And so that was important. It's important, the acknowledgement, to just say, wait a minute, you know, this is happening. It's like the Red Sox statement, racism is real. Real, this is happening. That's actually a big step, because part of that experience is defending yourself, relitigating your experience, and often people dismissing it, saying, "Well, racism wouldn't exist if you just stopped bringing it up," or "That didn't really happen," or "It didn't mean that." Or I think that's part of what gets frustrating, you know, sort of restating it. And so when you're finally getting larger organizations, leagues, and teams, teammates who don't necessarily look like you, coming out and saying, no, this is real, and we're listening and we understand, that is extremely powerful.
Golic.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time. We're delighted to be joined by Sports Siren, as she's known on Twitter. Our ESPN Intrepid reporter, Holly Rowe, joins us now inside the WNBA bubble. Holly, thanks for being with us this morning. We appreciate your time. We know there had been a couple of concerns posted by some of the players about some of the things when they first got to the bubble at the campus there. But how would you describe life inside the WNBA bubble right now?
Well, I am sitting squarely inside of the WNBA bubble, or as we are all affectionately calling it, the wubble, and things have gotten better. So, you know, they had a couple of hiccups the first 48 hours. They have fixed those, but I'm going to tell you, my hotel is amazing, clean, lovely. The food's been awesome, and all the players I've talked to are happy. They got any little hiccups. There was only a handful, but they got those resolved.
As far as players that hiccup on arriving, not arriving, trying to medically opt out, Elena Deladon, that whole story and the road it has taken, what is going on with her, if anything?
Yeah, I don't think that we'll see Elena play this year. She has Lyme disease and some continuing conditions from Lyme disease, and just we don't know much about the coronavirus and how it will interact with her immune system, so she's understandably very nervous. But there are a lot of stars here that are returning to the court. Diana Taurasi is back playing this year, and she's going to take to the court Saturday. You'll see that game on ABC. Sue Bird is back, MVP from 2018, Brianna Stewart. So there are some players who aren't playing, but it is the most star power we've ever had in the league who is back, who did opt in, Candace Parker, Neko Ogumike, a lot of MVP power in the league this year. So it is exciting.
Holly Rowe with us, reporting live from the Wubble, our ESPN NBA, WNBA, all-around reporter in this. And Holly, I'm curious, you mentioned some of those names involved in this, and I saw this tweet yesterday from Rebecca Lobo. Sabrina Ionescu was 4 years old when Sue Bird played her first WNBA game. They're going to square off at noon Eastern on Saturday. Have you heard much about Sabrina and just kind of what this moment is meaning to her, going up against a legend and being around someone like Sue Bird in your first look at WNBA action?
Yeah, there's kind of a cool backstory there. Sabrina played against Sue Bird this year when Sabrina was with Oregon, and Oregon beat the U.S. national team. So Sue and Sabrina have already faced off. But to be fair, Sue Bird was just coming back from a knee microfracture surgery. It was her first game back from injury. So there's been a little beef. We call it the tea here in the WNBA, but Sabrina Ionescu's twin brother, Eddie, tweeted the box score from that and like highlighted what Sabrina did against Sue Bird in that first matchup. Sue Bird had some good sense of humor and responded. Somebody on Twitter sent out this meme that was like a player driving to the basket every single time. And Sue had a good sense of humor. And she said, "How do y'all like my new haircut?" So they're having some fun back and forth. But Sabrina, we actually just covered, I just did her last college game for Oregon right before the pandemic hit. So that's the last basketball game I've covered. And the next basketball game I'll cover is her pro debut. She's really excited. I ran into her in the hotel lobby yesterday, and she said everything's been going really well here. She's very happy with her training camp so far. But one interesting thing she said, she knows the entire New York Liberty playbook. She said before she got here, she wanted to make sure that she knew all the plays, you know, because they haven't really been able to get on a court together except for the last 14 days. So Sabrina knows all the plays already. She's got 7 rookies on this team. I think that's kind of cool that she came in here knowing the whole playbook already.
Yeah, came in prepared. There's no question about it, as Holly Rowe is with us. So, Holly Rowe, we've seen what the NBA plans to do to keep going with the Black Lives Matter movement. And LeBron says it's not a movement for him. It's just his life. We saw what Major League Baseball did to start the season between the Nationals and the Dodgers, socially distanced, holding that black ribbon, and so many of the players kneeling, and Andrew McCutchen writing that poem that he got Morgan Freeman to voice. What are the WNBA plans, and how are they going to continue to keep the focus on what they want to keep it on in that front?
Yeah, it's really special. The WNBA, in association with the Players Association and the league itself, they have put Black Lives Matter on the court here. It was actually Breonna Stewart's idea in the beginning, the MVP from 2018, and the NBA liked that idea, and they took it for their own in Orlando. The other thing that's going to be very special is opening day and Sunday, on Saturday and Sunday, all of the players will have the name Breonna Taylor. So their jerseys will say Angel McCautry, and then right below that will say the name of Breonna Taylor, who was a young woman, 26 years old. You may have heard about her, shot and killed in her bed in Louisville by police on a no-knock warrant. And you've seen a lot of the NBA players in their media availability when people ask them questions. They have directed that to Breonna Taylor's situation and that she has still not had any justice. So I really think it's neat. All of the women of the WNBA will have her name on their jersey. They want us to continue to say her name and know that there are forgotten women who are often the victims of police brutality. So they want to keep that at the forefront. That was Angel McCautry's idea. She played there at Louisville, and Louisville is where this terrible incident happened with Breonna Taylor. And it's cool. They've been working with her mom, Tamika Palmer, and they actually did a panel and a big Zoom call with all the players and the Social Justice Council with Breonna Taylor's mother night before last. So it's just very special what they are continuing to do here for the WNBA and the Black Lives Matter lifestyle. I like what LeBron said, that it's not just a movement, it is life, everyday life, and we are here to support that.
And we know that some women decided not to play this year to keep that going, but it is impressive. Well, Holly, you're talking about the women inside the Wubble, as you are calling it, still making this a very, very important and wanting to keep it on the forefront, no doubt about it. But also, they are there to play basketball. So let's look at this season, this 22-game season they're going to have, again, with some big-time players not going to be there. Who is the favorite? How do you see the season playing out?
Well, I love that, you know, you guys were talking about the Seattle Kraken. So release the WNBA Kraken right now, because I think Seattle is the team to beat here. You know, they get Breanna Stewart back, who sat out last year with an Achilles injury. And she has been able to get some time back on the court playing with the U.S. national team. She had 5 games in Russia there with her pro team before the pandemic hit. And so Breanna Stewart has looked unbelievable. Every practice video I've seen of her looks like she is on an MVP mission. She gets Sue Bird back. But this is a young team that had to learn how to play without those two stars last year. And so other players like Natasha Howard, Jewel Lloyd, Jordan Canada, they probably have more talent coming off the bench than some teams have on their roster. So I think Seattle is the team to beat. And then Phoenix, Brittany Griner said she has never felt better. The 6'8 dominating player for the Phoenix Mercury. She was on an MVP pace last year, and she said that her body feels great. She's never had this much time off, and so she actually had access to a gym in Phoenix throughout the whole pandemic. So Brittany Griner looks really good, and, oh, you know, she just gets Diana Taurasi back next to her. And then Skylar Diggins-Smith, who is a terrific guard, also joins that team. So we've got some really good teams. Oh, don't forget L.A., you know, Candace Parker, one of the best in the world.
Yeah. That Seattle lineup, though, when you mentioned Skylar is there as well, is absolutely remarkable. So really, Seattle is winning on a lot of fronts right now. It's basically the takeaway this
morning.
It
is absolutely a good time to be there. It's a great time to be in the Wubble as long as Holly Rowe is there. Holly, we appreciate the time as always this morning. Stay safe and enjoy life in the Wubble. We're looking forward to tip off this weekend.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me, and thanks for talking about the WNBA.
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant jello mold. Very interesting where that went.
That is our fine, intrepid Major League Baseball reporter, Marley Rivera. Marley, thanks for being with us this morning. We got the season underway with the Yankees and the Nationals, although we didn't quite finish that game the way we'd hoped to, but it certainly looked like the Yankees are going to get what they hoped they were getting when they paid all that money to Gerrit Cole. He's now 17-0 over his last 23 regular season starts.
Good morning, gentlemen. Absolutely. I mean, obviously, with a rain-shortened game, it is a complete game. Gerrit Cole joked around that at that point, he said, it's ridiculous, it's a joke. But he said it, you know, laughing. The fact that we see excellent performance from Max Scherzer striking out 11 Yankees. And then on the other side, there's Gerrit Cole having pitched just 5 innings of one-hit baseball, and he comes out with the win. The Yankees are the ones that are 1-0 over the New York football team, over the Washington football team. over the Washington baseball team. Can we call the Nationals the Washington baseball team from now on?
Yeah, yes. I guess so.
We're going to go literal with all sports teams from now on.
All sports in Washington, without question. Then the news off the field, Juan Soto, he does test positive for the coronavirus. And they did say from contact tracing that they don't believe he was around anybody else to infect anybody else. I guess we'll find out when more tests come back. But just how damning could this be for the league right out of the gate having this positive test?
Well, I think it was one of those wake-up calls, right? It's the reality that sets in. Both managers, both Dave Martinez and Aaron Boone, but did the same thing. They're like, we were so excited. You get to opening day, and then the news comes that kind of sets you back, you know, on your feet. You're like, okay, you see, we are trying to play baseball in the middle of a pandemic, and this is exactly what can happen. And Dave Martinez became the first manager, right, to deal with a COVID-19 positive player on game day. And it's very interesting. He said, you know, you worry about the player. The first thing that you want, of course, is for him to be okay. And the great news is that Juan Soto, a very healthy young man, is asymptomatic. But then, you know, it's exactly what you guys said. Now, reliever Sean Doolittle at the end of the game said that they are hoping, he admitted, that they're a bit hoping that it's a false positive, because there were a lot of tests that Juan Soto went through. I believe it was 4, what Dave Martinez said, and they were all negative. So the last test was the one that came positive. And, of course, they isolated him immediately, started with the protocols, started with the contact tracing, as you mentioned, and it hasn't been an issue. But the Washington team, they were trying to get tested yesterday. It's supposed to get all the results this morning, and we should have further information on the testing of the rest of the team, not necessarily on Juan Soto.
Marley Rivera with us, our ESPN Major League Baseball reporter. And I guess to that extent, how was it communicated to the rest of the players in all this? Because I know you mentioned Sean Doolittle's response, but it seems like there'd have to be a fair amount of anxiety that could come with that if it's not delivered the right way.
According to what GM Mike Rizzo told us in the, and before the game started, what he said was that they get the information in the morning, right? So obviously we did not have access to the ballpark under this new coronavirus very, very strict rules. We normally arrive to the ballpark as writers about 5 hours before the game. We're only allowed an hour before the game now. So we had very limited access, not only, visually to see what was going on in the ballpark, but even, to talk to anybody over Zoom calls. It was just very, very limited. So Rizzo told us specifically that that happened in the morning, which means they informed the entire team from the morning. And Dave Martinez said that he spoke to them. He said, you know what, we're going to be okay. This is part of this pandemic. Of course, this is our best offensive player, so we are going to miss him. And we're, less of a better team against the New York Yankees without him. But this is just part of reality. And it was very almost business-like approach, which is the one they have to have. I mean, it really is crazy. I asked Aaron Boone at what point Dave Martinez became the first manager to have to deal with this. Are you concerned about it? And he said, no, in the sense that, not that you're not concerned big picture, but in the sense that this is something that they know they're going to have to deal with and they're prepared to do so.
Yeah, and we heard from Jeff Passan earlier, hopefully it won't be a long time because he has to get those two negative tests and there's time around. And then if you're talking about a couple of weeks and a 60-game schedule, that becomes a significant period of time. So hopefully that's something they can avoid. Marley, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much. We'll see what happens as Major League Baseball is underway. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
This has been the Best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.